Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What?
El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
He's here, everybody. Every Tuesday with Wyman and Bob, we bring in the one, the only, El Hombre. Michael Bradley, who joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. And I think last we spoke, Michael, I asked you about your belief, your level of confidence in the Michigan Wolverines' chances over the Ohio State Buckeyes. And I don't believe you had a lot of confidence or faith, and it almost sounded like you said they had no chance. Am I remembering that correctly?
I was certainly not at a very high level of confidence, that's for sure. I come to you today contrite for my lack of faith in the mighty Wolverines, but euphoric for their performance on Saturday as they smashed the horrible people from Columbus.
Yeah, for those that don't know, that maybe didn't see the game or didn't pay attention, it wasn't even competitive. 42-27, the final in that one.
I wouldn't say it wasn't competitive.
Not competitive. I mean, second half was out of hand.
Trailed in the first half. The second half, they scored every possession except for the kneel down at the end. This was as if someone exhumed Bo Schembechler's body and put him on the sideline in his hat and his old headphones, chewing gum and barking at everybody, because they ran the ball about 40 times, jammed it straight down Ohio's throat, and showed they were the far more physical team. It was a thing of beauty and a wonderful game to watch if you like sort of the old-time football.
Is this finally the... Well, I don't know the perception of Jim Harbaugh for actual Michigan fans, but it always seemed like he was a little undeserving of that salary because of his record against Michigan State and Ohio State against these ranked teams. Does this erase all those bad memories after a win like this?
Not all of them. I mean, look, let's face it. The first 6 years of his tenure were certainly not wonderful. You know, he split with Michigan State. He couldn't beat the horrible people from Columbus. Penn State gave him some trouble. I think what happened is, and look, people right now are out of their minds. I can tell you, I follow a couple of folks on Twitter who retweet 1,000 things from other Michigan fans, and people have completely lost their minds and their memories. So right now, Harbaugh can do no wrong. Now they go to Indianapolis on Saturday and lay one on the ground against Iowa, and now you're going to start to hear some grousing. So for me, this is a win he absolutely had to have to not only to vindicate himself, but to prove that this change that he made, a different coaching staff, a different level of energy for himself, was really going to stick, or was this just another one where we can beat the teams we're supposed to beat, but not beat teams that are any that are better than us?
And do you see the news? They are in the top four now with Georgia, Alabama, and Cincinnati.
They're second. Forget the top four. They're in the top two.
How about that?
And look, hold on to Iowa. You know, beat Iowa, and they're in the playoff. And they certainly have the ability to beat Iowa. Iowa's not going to overwhelm anybody offensively. They're inept. They're all excited that they've got Stephen Petras back, or whatever his name is, Spencer Petras back at quarterback. He's completed like 55% of his passes this year. So if they come in with the right attitude, if they want to play as hard as they have over the past several weeks, then they're going to be successful and they're going to be able to achieve the something that nobody thought was even remotely possible. If you told me at the beginning of the season Michigan would be sitting here at the Big Ten championship game, ranked second in the country, and needing a win over a good, very good, but not great Iowa team to get to the playoff, I would have probably called you to the men in the white coats to take you to the Laughing Academy.
Hey, by the way, a very cool gesture by Harbaugh, seeing that he's, you know, any bonus money that he's going to be making, you know, from this point forward, he will distribute amongst those that were impacted financially by the whole COVID situation on the staff there. I think that's a very cool gesture on his part.
Extremely. Really, really good job by him. I mean, look, he made a ton of money over the last 6 years in his contract. He made a lot of money with the 49ers. Stanford certainly didn't pay him peanuts. So he's rolling in it. And this is a great gesture. It continues on a week of great gestures. Blake Corum, the running back, took his NIL, name, image, and likeness money, and bought turkey and food for people who were underprivileged, and so he's given it back. So this is a great move by Harbaugh. Look, people don't like him. He rubs a lot of people the wrong way. You know, it's sort of like he's a jerk, but he's our jerk. And I loved what he did about Ryan Day. And anybody who gets upset about what he said about Ryan Day, and I'll tell you what it is in a second, really hasn't been paying attention, because after Harbaugh confronted Day this summer over some workouts that were not necessarily kosher, Day said, we want to hang 100 on them. And then Harbaugh said in his postgame comments, hey, some people stand on third base and think they hit a triple. Day took over a ready-made program from Pope Urban VI. He's done great things with it, but things didn't go so well for him on Saturday.
I enjoyed it. He's the master at it. You know, listen, when he was the head coach of the 49ers, I've never had more fun with a rivalry than what existed between the 49ers and the Seahawks. And a lot of it was him jabbing Pete Carroll, jabbing the team. It was just, it's his awkward nature. He's easy to sports hate. So I think it's fun.
Yeah, he is. You're right. He is not a guy who is prone to being smooth, which is hilarious because his brother John is the antithesis.
Yeah.
You talk to John Harbaugh on the phone, and when you hang up, you half expect him to call you back and ask you to go to lunch with him.
Hey, last thing on Michigan, and we'll move off this. But did you watch the most recent Real Sports?
I did not. What was on there?
It was the story about their doctor Schembechler and the history of sexual abuse, I mean, from the 70s and the 80s, and there are almost 900 individual players that have come through and said, yeah, I was a victim of it, and they interviewed a bunch of the players. I mean, I hadn't heard about this, but it was, you know, comparable to what was, and maybe exceeding what was happening at Michigan State, but it was with wrestlers, with football players, and some of the things he did, and even Schembechler's son apparently was a victim of it and brought it up to him, and said Bo covered it up. I mean, that is beyond damning. And I think since that thing aired, somebody vandalized his statue out there and everything. I mean, it was ugly, man. That was an ugly report.
Yeah, and you know, I cannot tolerate that as a Michigan graduate. I'm not going to fall back on what the Paterno, you know, deniers did when he was enabling Jerry Sandusky to groom players and use the Penn State facilities, etc. This is unacceptable. And it is a huge black mark on Schembechler. It's a black mark on Michigan that it happened. It makes me feel a little less proud to be a graduate from there because of this. And it's correct. Everything that was said is true. It's horrible. And you can't, you know, I'm praying that nothing like this is happening now or has happened in the past 10 or 15, 20 years. But this is awful stuff. It is unacceptable. It's contemptible. And it is indeed something that when you look at Schembechler now, you think of him as nothing more than just someone who cared about winning and not necessarily doing the right thing.
Well, Michael, what do you think about the rest of the college football world, these big coaching moves? I mean, USC's buying houses for Lincoln Riley, buying all houses for him, and then Brian Kelly getting poached from Notre Dame.
Once the big name schools started to have openings, you knew they weren't going to be going for, you know, risky or, you know, big risk, big reward kinds of hires. They needed big names. And the only way you can get those types of coaches is by money whipping them. And Riley and Kelly were two coaches who were potentially available for different reasons. Riley saw that Oklahoma is going to have to move into the SEC West, where he's going to have to deal with Texas A&M. He's going to have to deal with the rivalry with Texas. He's going to have to deal with Alabama, LSU. That's not easy to do. And here's the problem. It's tough to go into Texas once Texas joins the SEC and start stealing players like he has been. And Oklahoma doesn't produce a lot of players. Going to USC puts him in the Pac-12. Oregon's a very good team. Washington could be a very good team. UCLA, you know, every now and then one of the other schools will pop up. But the path to the end, the college football playoffs, a lot easier from the Pac-12 than from the SEC. And as for Kelly, the longest tenured coach in the history of Notre Dame football is Newt Rockne, 13 years. Now, he would have stayed a couple more years if he hadn't died in a plane crash. Leahy, Parsegian, Holtz, Kelly, all 11 years. It's a tough job. You have national alumni, you have national expectations, and you have a set of academic standards that are on a par with Duke, Vanderbilt, and the better private Stanford private schools in the country. You can't get all the players you want to get. And you're not in a conference. Even though you get to play 5 ACC cream puffs every year, you still are not in a conference. I think Kelly was saying, I can get an LSU where I can do whatever I want. And I mean it. There's a guy in our department at Villanova who taught it at LSU for a couple years. He said to me today, flat out, it's like the mob down there. You can get away with whatever you want. And I'm not saying he's going to get out and cheat, but I mean, you, there's nobody at the admissions office saying, well, I'm sorry, we better take a second look at this five-star receiver. Like, yeah, sure, let him in.
And he's getting a boatload of cash on top of it, too.
That always helps. Boatloads of cash are attractive.
Yeah, because he's, I mean, it's not like he's leaving a dumpster fire. That's a team that's on the cusp of a playoff spot as well. So, you know, that's a very good team he's leaving. And,
it is, but if you look at it, the type of talent he gets at Notre Dame is not on a par with what is available down in Louisiana. I mean, you want to talk about a fertile recruiting area.
Yeah.
I mean, Alabama does great work there. Mississippi locks down its state. Georgia's got a lot. But LSU is sitting in a state that has remarkable resources. And if you can close down the borders on that state and every now and then make an incursion into Houston to the west, you're going to win a lot of games.
So what's the feeling out there as you watch the team in your division? You hate them all in terms of baseball. The New York Mets just unloading truckloads of money. Max Scherzer signed, and I'm always leery of pitcher deals regardless of their 27 or 37. It's just that the pitchers throwing as hard as they do, you're ready for an injury at any time. This is a guy who's going to be paid $43.3 million per year. He's 37 years old. He's a brilliant talent, but had dead arm at the end of the year. Boy, this feels like a huge gamble. Could be huge, but would you be stunned if all of a sudden he was having arm issues and everything with the Mets?
That would be a tragedy.
I know you'd be upset, certainly.
No, it would be horrible. No, I thought the same thing. Unless people, except for the Roger Clemens, Randy Johnson, 39, 40, 41, probably illegal substance induced binges that people had. You don't see pitchers at 38, 39, and 40 winning 20 games. Scherzer's good. He's going to be good. He's going to be very good sometimes. But as you said, there's a chance that he's not going to that he may have some problems, and there's a big chance that he may not give you 30 starts that you want. The Mets had to do something, though. They collapsed this year. It was a mess. So it's a big risk. But here's the thing: the owner, Cohen. $43 million, it's not like he's sitting there going, oh, no, I'm eating ramen for the next couple of years. He's got it to spend.
Boy, you just look at that, though, for a 37-year-old pitcher, $43.3 million per year. My goodness.
Unreal. And I think that each yearly total is higher than the salaries entire teams, four or five other teams are paying. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Michael, what do you think about all of these rapid, frantic deals being signed before this labor lockout? And why does it seem like this one won't be as bad? I mean, there are perceptions that, okay, 94, canceled everything. We had one a couple years ago, it was bad. This one, all the talk is, well, it'll only be a month or two. So what makes this one different?
I think that they're going to be arguing less about how the money is going to be split and more about things like increased playoffs, maybe trimming a year off the service time necessary to become a free agent.
DH
maybe
in the National League.
What's that?
DH in the National League.
Yeah, you had to bring that up.
It's coming.
Yeah, so now we go to slow pitch softball in the NL, too.
Oh.
You guys have had it over there in the junior circuit for about 50
years. Nothing more electric than watching pitchers go up there and whiff.
There's nothing more electric than watching strategy in baseball rather than everybody just playing video games, right? When you got to make a double switch, when you got to decide when you want the pitcher to come out because he's up to bat that week.
That's amazing.
Then it's real baseball. But anyway, the last thing is, do you think they're going to come up? They may also try to, the players may also push for this, an end to this. Hey, we hold you out for 12 games, and that takes an entire year off your service time.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we're fighting on. There's pension issues that are going to be there. A professor from Purdue last year told me a lot about all of this, what the main issues are going to be. So I think that there's a boatload of money. And come February 1st, that's when the spring training clock starts to tick. Come March 1st, when there are actual spring training games, where ticket revenues will be given away, where television givebacks may have to happen, merchandise won't be sold. That's why I think people think it's going to be shorter, because this is off season, not in season.
Isn't it amazing to watch the amount of money being thrown around out there for a sport that everybody talks about? The fan base is dwindling every single year. The attendance is dwindling, just in terms of revenue generated. Then you look at a team like the Texas Rangers. For two players, they're shelling out $500 million for Corey Seager and Marcus Semien out there. So money is there. It's interesting to hear the woes of everybody surrounding the sport, yet you see the amount of money being tossed around very freely and easily. Tells a different story.
Well, it's all because of TV.
Yes.
It's all because of TV. And here's the thing. They better enjoy it for the next, 8 to 10 years, as long as these TV contracts are in. Because once we get into the next round and the streaming services start to come in, if the problem with streaming services getting the making bids on sports is, especially baseball, is with an older fan base, streaming is going to be not the same as turning on a TV and punching an 8547 into your remote control, right? You're going to have a TV that can handle the streaming services. You're going to have to understand how to use them, where to get the games. So it could, if I'm Hulu or Amazon Prime or whoever's going to be making the bids for baseball. Now, NFL, the younger fans will find it, the NBA, et cetera. But for baseball, I got to think, is the 65-year-old guy in Walla Walla going to be able to figure out where to find the Mariners home game with his smart TV, or is he going to be like my mom used to be, where she would call me up and say, I pushed the wrong button and I can't get anything on my television?
You drive over and fix it for her?
Drive over and fix it. Although, you know what I did? When my son got to be a teenager, I hand him the phone. Grandma's having problems with the remote. Talk her through it.
As soon as he got his license, drive over there. Fix it for her.
No, not drive over there. He was able to. This kid was able to talk her through it on the phone.
Oh, that's
he was,
good.
Okay, tell me what you're looking at right now. I'm listening to somebody speaking in Russian.
So I pushed the wrong button. I can't get it back. Hand the phone to the son.
What am I doing?
So good.
Do you want to bring it up now?
We forgot to ask the big
game that happened.
Yeah, we've got people saying, don't forget to ask El Hombre how his Turkey Bowl game went.
Oh, well, the good news is I'm not Schwantego.
That's good.
You were worried about that, too.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
You always are. Every pass thrown to you is fraught with peril.
Were you in danger of being Schwantego?
Oh, yeah, we lost. So, and there's nothing worse than you're standing there enjoying a cold Dr. Pepper after the game, and the winning team is standing there debating who the Schwantego is going to be. Then there's the trophy presentation. So I made a couple good defensive plays, caught every pass that was thrown to me, didn't score, but I also, the other team didn't know this, but I diagrammed three of our touchdown plays. I drew them up in the dirt there, like the old ball, the head ball coach. So I was able to help succeed in not doing that, and I came away with only one injury. One guy that is on our team, I was very happy he's on our team. He actually played football, and he plays football. If you get in his way, he's going to knock you over head over heels. He pushed this one guy on a kick return back. It was like a tumbleweed going in front of me. I had to come to a dead stop so I didn't trip over him and hurt myself. My right foot jammed in the front of my cleats. I now got a purple big toenail that's going to be 12 to 18 months before it heals.
So the winning team picks. So is there a lot of politicking and no honor among thieves and the losing team trying to sell each other out?
We sit over there and say a small prayer. We're working.
Well,
the road.
Yeah, are you clamoring to them, saying, hey, I did this. So
you're pleading your case.
You could do.
Yeah, okay.
That's the worst thing you could do.
Okay.
You plead your case. You're Schwantego.
So you sit there and hope they don't remember that you were actually in the game.
That's right. You got to look very unobtrusive. Now, the best one ever was I was one year, it came down to me and this other guy. They couldn't decide who was going to be Schwantego. So they decided they said, okay, we're going to decide it with a game of rock, paper, scissors. Now, I'm a really good rock, paper, scissors player, and I took him 2 out of 3. And he was Schwantego. He took the toilet seat and stormed off. To this day, he's upset about.
Is there any carryover? Do past Schwantegos get honored next year? Or what happens? They carry that mantle all year.
You get your name engraved on the toilet seat.
Now, what we did this year was, in the past, the Schwantego would display the toilet seat at his house.
Right.
but people wouldn't get to see it. So we convinced the bar that we go to, like 80 times a year, to put it up over the bar. So we now have the pink toilet seat displayed at Roach and O'Brien's in Haverford, Pennsylvania. It's a beautiful thing.
You guys should have your name engraved on it every year.
Well, no, we write it on it in black in Sharpie.
Oh, you do? So okay. So your name's on there?
Of course.
Like the Stanley Cup?
2007.
Oh, yeah. Wow. How about now? Is it 7-on-7, 5-on-5, 10-on-10? What is
whoever shows up.
Okay.
Okay.
We had a poor turnout this year. We only had 4-on-4.
Oh, man.
So okay. You were in danger of getting picked then. That's not a lot of other guys
that
they had to throw
you
for.
You want it to be like 8-on-8.
Yep.
So that there's a lot of potential Schwantego candidates. But when it's 4-on-4, and the guy stood up to say, you know, I've been waiting a long time to give this back. And I thought, oh, it was the guy I beat in the rock, paper, scissors at the presentation. I went and stood next to him. I was ready to accept the darn thing.
That's so good. Now, are you the only one that dresses up with the old school pants and the eye black and everything?
Well, no, anybody who wants the eye black gets the eye black. We got one guy who wears the same jersey every year. He bought it at a thrift store. We got another guy who wears his son's all-star lacrosse jersey and some old, like he's got a fake leather hat that you can put over your ears that looks like an Eagles helmet. His head's so damn big it doesn't fit on it. But everybody else is just digging out whatever they can.
Okay. All right. I love it. I love the picture of the pants and everything. Hey, before we let you go, we are speeding toward Christmas. How are the sales of Blessed by the Best, My Journey to Canton and Beyond, the book written by yourself along with the great Brian Dawkins?
Sales are going well. We're very excited about it, and it's the perfect holiday gift. I appreciate that you guys keep mentioning it. It's a very good stocking stuffer, inspirational story, an opportunity for you to learn about a Hall of Famer who overcame a lot and had a tremendous season, a tremendous career, some great stories. By the way, Bob, I just sent you my outfit from this year's Turkey Bowl. It was one of the best. And
is that a Chargers jersey?
Yes, it is. It's an old original 1961 Chargers jersey.
Nice. I'll have to show it to Lefko. Wyman's sick today, but Wyman doesn't want to know what you look like until he meets you. He said he's got an image in his mind of what you look like, but he doesn't completely know. So
6'4" tall, 225 pounds. Kent, Kentucky, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I'm not sure what his image is, but it'll be fun when you guys finally meet. Well, we appreciate it, man. You can follow Michael on Twitter at Daily Ombre. At Daily Ombre is where you can find him. You can find the book, Blessed by the Best, My Journey to Canton and Beyond. Brian Dawkins, along with Michael Bradley. Fantastic read for Christmas for the sports fan in your family. Michael, we'll talk again next week.
So long, suckers.
There he is, and I will show you this picture here.
I kind of wish you would have won the Schwantego. Just for the sake of story. Could have sent us a picture of him and the name on it.
Well, it's funny that they didn't have a good turnout, so there's more danger of being Schwantego.
Yeah. I didn't realize how perilous it was. When it's 4-on-4, it's not good odds.
I like they said, the other team didn't realize. I drew up two of our touchdown plays. Like it sounds like you're making your case.
That's why I had to know. I was like, well, are you trying to state your case to the other team then?
So funny. All right, coming up, Mariners made two big moves over the last few days, but there is one guy left who they need to get. We'll tell you who that is. Coming up next, it's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to Michael Bradley, who joined us in the previous segment. I got people texting in saying they want me to tweet out the picture he sent, which I just showed you during the break.
It's a great look. Yeah.
I wonder, I've talked about Wyman doesn't know what he looks like. I'm guessing the majority of our listeners have no idea what he looks like.
No, I'm sure they don't.
And they certainly have an image in their mind. I don't want to blow it for him. But this is quite an outfit he's wearing.
I don't think it would ruin that built-up notion.
And Wyman's not on Twitter, so he won't be able to see it.
Wyman don't tweet. We know that.
He don't tweet.
Yeah.
That's right. Maybe I'll tweet out his picture. I'll let you know if I do. We'll see.
It'll just be up there all of a sudden.
Well, I want to get the go-ahead from him first.
Makes sense.
Make sure it's all good.
It is a cool jersey, the original Chargers.
Yeah, from 1961, and he's wearing the number 61. He's got those gold pants, I think he said were from the early 80s Michigan pants.
Okay.
And then he's got the eye black.
You have described it and built it up enough that now you do
I got
it. You have to tweet it out with permission, of course.
Yeah.
You know, name, image, and likeness.
We you just said go ahead.
So, yeah, I think the listeners deserve to see what this Schwantego non-winning man looks like.
He did not. He is not Schwantego,
which
he
is
did,
good.
It's he did
good
not get the pink toilet seat and have to sign his name on there again. So there you go. I think he said what 2007.
Yeah.
His name is on there. So, all right, I'll let you know when I tweet that out. But meanwhile, we touched on this earlier for those of you just tuning in. The free agent market, the baseball world is very active right now. You got a bunch of deals being made, and the Mariners in the thick of it. And they weren't initially. Adam Frazier was their deal. Nice player. Good player. Not a guy who's hitting home runs, driving in a ton of runs, but he's an all-star. He's a utility guy. Can play second base, can play outfield. So it feels like a much better version of Dylan Moore is what that feels like. And those guys are incredibly valuable to have. And I like the acquisition of him. You gave up prospects in exchange for him. Then Marcus.
And not big ones either.
No.
That should be important.
No. I did see some people lamenting, you know, oh, man, I didn't want to see this guy go. I'm like, come on, really?
He's not anywhere near top five.
Yeah.
It's instrumental to what you're building short term.
Everybody wants to give their garbage for something great.
Yes.
Here, take all these no talent, washed up players and give us your best player. That's just not how it works, unfortunately. But I like the deal. It wasn't the big splash by any stretch. It wasn't like, hey, they're serious with this move. He's a one-year guy. He's signed through the end of the season. We'll see what happens with that. But then Marcus Semien signs with the Texas Rangers for $175 million in a 7-year deal, we said. So he'll be 38, almost 39 when that deal ends.
By the way, Morosi called that to the letter on our show last week.
In terms of years and money. Really?
Yeah. Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it.
Did he really?
Yeah, he said 7 years, $175 million.
Boy, he's good.
Yeah.
Oh, that Morosi.
I can play that clip when he comes on again.
He knows his stuff. Got to give him credit for that. Doesn't know how to vote for manager of the year, but by God, he got that one right.
He knows the financial details,
yeah,
his opinion on managers.
Credit where credit is due and criticism where criticism is due. So then that happened. People got a little jumpy, little, hey, I thought he was coming here. I thought the Mariners were going to be involved. Then they go Robbie Ray, the current king of the AL in terms of Cy Young. He is your Cy Young Award winner for the Toronto Blue Jays, signs a 5-year deal with the Mariners, which in actuality is a 3-year deal. He can opt out after that. And I would imagine if he performs anywhere close to where they hope he does, he will opt out because at that point he'll probably be underpaid. So they go big deal on him. So to this point, if you're going to grade it or, you know, hey, is it success? Is it a failure? I'd say it's a success. They're far from done. This isn't the end. This isn't, okay, we made our big move, and now we'll just sprinkle in a couple veterans and hope they can pop. That's not how this is going to – it better not be how it goes. They are set to spend. But if you follow all the accounts on Twitter, the different, you know, MLB trade rumors and Morosi and Feinsand and all these different people, they're in on a few other players out there, Chris Bryant being one of them. The player from Japan, Suzuki, they're in on him. He's in on them. We'll see if that happens. Chris Taylor. Chris Taylor's a weird one. I don't think
you need him anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Because he kind of serves the purpose that Frazier does, except he's got more pop. I just felt weird about looking at him as some sort of big-time acquisition because when he was here, he did nothing. And then he goes to the Dodgers and he turns into a very good player. And the idea that somehow they'd bring him back and we'd be viewing it as this big acquisition, I always felt kind of conflicted about that. You know, and it's probably not fair because he's not the same player he was when he was here.
You can definitely never hit a home run in the higher now.
Yeah.
And Chris Bryant's still the centerpiece out there.
He's the one I want.
And he is the
one
that everyone is clamoring for now.
I want him and I want Stroman. If you told me you can have Story or Bryant, I'm going with Bryant. And for me, it's a very easy call. I like that he's versatile. I like that he can play third base. He can play outfield. He's done both. He's done both very well. He can hit for power. He can hit for average. Still a young guy. I just like his game. So I would love to see them acquire Chris Bryant. They're not alone. The Rockies are interested. There are a number of teams.
I think that could be one because of that. You know, if we don't see something soon, that I think that's one where Chris Bryant could drag into post-lockout because so many teams are now after him. The Rockies have now come in on him. The Blue Jays want him. They're desperate. I mean, they lost Simeon. They lost Robbie Ray. They have lost a ton of pieces from a team where they did all this spending. I mean, they went out and got Jose Barrios. I just had
Barrios.
To drop that in. Last year at the trade deadline, inked him to a long-term extension. So their plan was to win and to go big this offseason as well. And all of a sudden, they've lost two prize pieces. So this could get into a bidding war that might drag out post-lockout. Or this is where the Mariners might have to come in and offer those extra years that you might not want. That one extra year or a little more money to sweeten the pot post some other team.
Yeah, we'll see.
Because would you do 7 years for Chris Bryant? He's 29.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too.
Yes, I would.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm much more apt to give a position player, especially in their 20s, a long term. Pitchers are the ones I really worry about. Simeon.
What if they have to go? So this is what they might have to do. If you're the Mariners and you want to lock up Chris Bryant, they might have to go Rangers, go 10 years like they did with Seager. Corey Seager got 10 years, and they probably won't give out $325 million, but if they give 10 years and, what, $200 million?
Would you say he's 20 what? 20?
29.
Because you know, barring a Bonds-like, you know, chemical enhancement, you don't get better when you're 38, you're 39, 37, 38, 39. Your skills are declining, your durability.
It might be the cost of doing business, though, for the three or four good years that you get.
Well, and that's how you look at it, because that's the Albert Pujols deal. You know, the end of that deal looks terrible versus what he gave you early in it. So when you're planning on the end of this deal looking really bad, you know, it's – listen, again, there's no salary cap. It's not my money. So if they went and said, hey, in order to bring Chris Bryant here, we had to go – 8 years, 10 years. Okay. All right. As long as it doesn't prevent you from filling the spots you desperately need, in addition to that, another rotation arm, or maybe two. Maybe, again, I'm still going Stroman and Tyler Anderson. I don't think that's a huge ask, because Stroman is, I think he's a very good pitcher.
I don't think you're going to get all three.
I want all three.
No, you can't get all three.
Why?
Because everyone else wants these guys, too. You just, at some point, you're going to run out of resources.
More.
You can get good guys in a trade. Remember, there are good prospects in this farm system that are tradable assets. So I think Bryant would complete an incredible offseason. Bryant plus one pitcher, that would be far beyond. Yeah, Bryant and Stroman, that would be an unquestioned success.
Yes, if you went Frazier, Ray, Bryant, and Stroman, and then you sprinkle in some, you know, veterans who fill in the gaps here, that's an A. That's an A. If we're giving out grades, that's an A.
All right, well, let's text that to Jerry DePoto.
Yeah, I don't think he's aware of it. He'll be aware of it. Just let you know.
Plan.
We're gonna give you your grade in advance should you complete this task.
Just tell him that's exactly what he needs to do. That's it. He can enjoy the rest of his December and, you know, a day of left in November.
We did all the planning for him. We identified the targets for him. This is very easy. Now you just got to hand him the money, Jerry. It's all up to you. All right. How do the Seahawks establish the run when the offense is barely on the field? That's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
I'm trying to get clarification from El Hombre here if this pick was taken pregame or postgame. It looks sort of postgame to me, doesn't it?
Oh, let's say pregame. I just saw it once. Hang on. You tweeted out? Let me look.
Not yet.
Oh.
Because what I wrote in the tweet is it's pick after his Turkey Bowl defeat. But then I'm like, well, maybe he took it before. I don't think it really matters.
Nah.
I'm just trying to be accurate here. But you know what? I'm just going to say it's a postgame pick. And if it's pregame, oh, well, my bad. So
because here's my thought. They lost. He was worried about Schwantego. I don't think he'd be that happy postgame. Or it could have been post-announcement.
He doesn't look happy in it.
Oh, wait.
He's not smiling.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm just calling it postgame. If I'm wrong, I'll own it. But there we go. My tweet was just sent. So you can see what El Hombre looks like in his garb for the Turkey Bowl. If you're on Twitter, at Daily Hombre is his Twitter handle where you can follow him. But at Bob Stelton is where the picture has just been sent. So enjoy. It is quite a getup with the eye black, the jersey, the pants, and looking none too pleased. So there you go. At Bob Stelton on Twitter. All right. Much of what we've heard about you know, some of the gripes, I guess, from the team themselves and people around this Seahawks team is, where's the running game? What's going on with the running game? Well, you know, Chris Carson's not there. And they definitely want to establish a running attack. Pete Carroll on with Mike Salk saying, you know, not having Carson there has really hurt this run game?
Don't want to make a big excuse that Chris isn't here, but Chris has been that guy for us. And we've always hoped that Rashad Penny will come through and be that guy for us. And we've had a 1-2 thought for a lot of years. And we're seeing Alex do everything he can to try to help us out. And we mixed in DJ a little bit tonight. But go back to the image of what it was like back in the day, you know, when we were putting this program together, and Marshawn was such a big part of it. That was it. It wasn't all that he did. It was just the fit of it all. And you know, when that guy's there, you give him the ball because he's that guy. And that's what Chris always has been.
So he's saying they don't have the guy. They've got Alex Collins, who's done an admirable job, but he's not Chris Carson. But I would say Chris Carson would have had a hard time behind this line, the way they were playing. I don't know how you establish the run game when the line is playing that way. There are special backs that can make things happen, even when the blocking isn't great, when the holes aren't being opened up. But for those that were clamoring, why did you only run the ball 12 times? Two of those were from Russell Wilson. I don't know that it would have been a wise game plan to sit there and beat your head against the wall, and you're already having trouble with three and out.
Well, what about a mix? I mean, the first drive that they scored on, that was a nice mix. And they had some run. They got a little play action. They got some tight end action in there. And that worked. You look at such a massive disparity for a team that wants to establish the run when Washington had 43 rushing attempts.
Mm-hmm.
And not all that was working the entire game. A lot of it was down the stretch towards the end of the game. They had plenty of three and outs. And they just kept going. And not to say that they kept pounding their head against the wall. And perhaps their offensive line is better, because we've seen that, you know, a lot of lines are better. But 12 attempts, which technically 10 rushing attempts to running backs, to 43 and 29 of them to Antonio Gibson. It's just such a vast disparity, because Pete Carroll comes on and talks like this, where he wants to establish the run, and I think you do have to. And in two of the games where they were winnable, against Washington and against Green Bay and against the Saints, you barely gave the ball to running backs.
But you weren't having success. You talk about one drive. The majority of this game, this line was atrocious last night. I'm sorry. They just were. So the idea that we're going to establish a run game when the second the ball is snapped, you've got red jerseys in the backfield.
It's trying to catch them off guard, I think, though.
They weren't off guard by anything. They didn't fool them with anything. Come on. It was terrible.
And that's on the play calling. But you've got to switch up at some point in terms of knowing what's coming and having Russell Wilson drop back and be constantly under pressure. What about a draw or something? There are different ways to get the run game going.
Yeah.
And I know it's not logical to have DK Metcalf line up back there, but you know, we have seen, and like John Clayton was mentioning, and everything that we've talked about with the Niners and Debo Samuel, he's a big part of their run game. So they find different ways to move the football that isn't drop back and pass or run the ball to Alex Collins and hand off and go up the middle.
They could have, you know, easily gone with a little swing pass out of the backfield.
Exactly.
They could have, you know, some quick hitters like that, especially with the line playing the way they were.
Shovel pass, reverse, anything.
They could have gotten creative, but I think the defense was so disruptive to that line that you had Wilson under siege. As much as people are ripping on him, and they should, he was not good, he was also under siege. And one of the best runs of the game was him just taking the ball and going for it. I think it was the longest run of the day, 12 yards for a first down, and maybe we should have seen more of that, because it was just – he was under constant pressure last night. It was ridiculous how poorly that line played, especially Fuller and Posick. Just ragdolled in that game. It was bad.
But there has to be a solution. And obviously there hasn't been, because the 3-8. But if the line is getting manhandled like that, there has to be some kind of adjustment, some kind of – adaptation to take advantage of the defensive over-aggressiveness. If they're getting into the backfield that easily,
but
hit him with a screen.
They weren't getting killed with blitzes. They weren't rushing five. They weren't rushing. Half the time they're getting there with three. They were getting there with four and dropping everybody else into coverage.
Right. So if you have three guys on the line, though, then you can run. And if that doesn't work and they start to bring guys up, I'm just saying, because we saw a completely inept offense again, and then you look at the disparity in carries, and they only ran 43 plays. So, of course, you're not going to have a lot of runs.
And then they're behind, so you got to throw the ball, and they're running out of time, so you're not running
the ball. They weren't behind by that much. They were behind by eight, which is still a one-possession game, and for most of the game they were tied 9-9, and then they were down by one score. So it's not like this one was out of hand like the Cardinals game was. And I think you just have to kind of throw convention out the window one way or another, right?
With, yeah, with I would have opted more for some swing passes, some what you'd call a long handoff.
Yeah,
something
so
like
that's,
that.
Well, that's just essentially the idea of, a run, too, because it's safe like that.
Yeah, but the idea of just handing the ball to Alex Collins and say, well, I hope you do better than the other 10 carries. No, that was nonsense. The line was so poor that I would have been upset with that.
Well,
if they would have gotten creative, if they would have gotten creative with swing passes and some slants, some quick hitters, okay, yeah, I'm on board with that all day.
And that's what they have to, and that's an extension of the run game.
Yeah.
And so they need to do that, and who knows, maybe that then softens up the defense, and it gives you a little respect. And we've seen Alex Collins get some space when he has room to get through the line. He is not a starting running back in the NFL compared to Chris Carson, and obviously Chris Carson is a difference maker because it seems like this offense is still working under the assumption that they have Chris Carson and they can run like that. So you have to adapt somehow because this is the situation. So even if the line is getting killed and even if you have a running back that technically was second or third on your depth chart at the start of the season, there's got to be a way to get some balance and free up a different look, just to give him a different look. So then maybe all of a sudden you have to peek into the backfield and then DK Metcalf might be open.
I put that on Shane Waldron.
Yeah.
But you've got to get creative. You are forced into an adjustment. You didn't make it. You didn't make it. You just abandoned the run game. And instead, Russell's chucking the ball down the field, feeling the pressure of, oh, man, we're not playing well. We're three and out. I got to get something done. And he's going for the home run ball rather than taking the stuff underneath that we saw on multiple occasions. Guys were wide open. So there's the snowball effect to the lack of impact from the run game. They've got to get more creative with it. And again, I'm having a hard time figuring out, is this Waldron? Is this Pete? Is it Solari in the O-line? I think it's a combination of everything. You know, and I know that sounds like a cop-out, but there isn't one problem. It's multiple. And it all trickles down. It all impacts the rest of it. So not having Carson is a problem. Not having Penny is a problem. Well, you're used to not having Penny. Again, he was out. He was scratched. You got backup running backs that aren't, as you can see, starting running backs. You got a line that is just having a really rough time of it. So, you know, you've got to get creative, and it's got to be something more than Russell, hang on to the ball, keep the play alive, and hit somebody downfield, which worked a couple times with Tyler Lockett here and there, but you can't force the ball that way. You got to take what the defense is giving you, and that's what they've been really poor at. So hopefully we'll see more of it, but at this point, nothing to lose. Yeah, go for it. I think Waldron, go nuts.
Yeah.
Statue of Liberty. Let's do that.
Does that even work? Does that play work?
Flea flicker. Well, I don't care. Try it. At this point, you can get creative. Make it entertaining.
The annexation of Puerto Rico?
Whatever you want. Sign me up for all of it. Again, people are saying, please tweet the photo. I tweeted it out. The photo is out there of El Hombre in his turkey bowl
garb. Refresh. Hit refresh.
Yeah. At Bob Stelton on Twitter, you can see him in all of his glory, and I'm sure he'll be checking the comments on the photo. So help yourself if you're on Twitter, at Bob Stelton. Meanwhile, we are going to come back, talk a little more football with the professor, John Clayton, who will join us next year with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.